Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. In the studio with me today, Linda Vanella, a psychotherapist, yoga instructor, a whole bunch of things.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Armand. I'm glad to be here. I see that we're discussing belligerence. Yes. And so I thought I would come and try and add my two cents to this, because I used to have a thyroid misfunction that would occasionally manifest in this sort of belligerence. I was like a dog barking. I was nasty. I was mean. I was sort of ready to bite your head off. And then I remember that feeling very well. So as a result, I began studying the association between thyroid and belligerence, which led me to a further exploration, that of bipolarity. Bipolar being another word for a manic depression. Well, specifically, I began to explore manic episodes and how they could become belligerency. So you, Armand, call this thing manic belligerence. So I knew we were on the same page and certainly worth exploring. So I'm glad to be here with you today.
Yeah, glad to have you here. I'm glad to have a thinker.
Thank you.
You know, Linda, let's start off with the word belligerence. The word belligerence is an individual, group, country, or other entity which acts in a hostile manner, period. Belligerent, you know? You told me before you were describing some of the qualities. There was righteousness. What else is there?
Yeah, there's arrogance and there's superiority along with righteousness, a feeling of great irritability.
And when you're belligerent, you know, you don't need the other person.
Nope.
Neediness goes away. Mm-hmm. You know, you could die right there. Now belligerence is interesting, but there is nothing as interesting as co-belligerence. And co-belligerence is a word that literally comes out of war talk. A co-belligerence is the waging of a war in cooperation against a common enemy without a formal treaty or military alliance. And then there's a more broad application of it, which is when two people turn against each other. And it begins to sound like your family. You know what I mean? Co-belligerence. Nasty. Just plain nasty. And not nasty in a nice kind of way. Nasty in a nasty way, like I want to spit on you kind of nasty. So I looked at it, and I look at two kinds of belligerence. I look at chronic belligerence and episodic belligerence. Chronic belligerence, that's with a T, belligerence, are they're that way all the time. It's a sourpuss. It's somebody who's always negative. You can see them at every WBAI meeting. There's going to be one person who just is plain old negative about everything, and nasty, and barking at every meeting, actually, no matter, even if it's not WBAI. But this other thing that you talk about, the episodic belligerence, that fascinates me. Because no matter how evolved we are, and I've had my episodes, no matter how far we go, it gets to a point where we become this belligerent self. And I, believe me, I have been there, where I have just been... plain, I am not going to be touched by you. I'm nasty. I'm just stay away from me. So in my studies, I looked and I found this one thing about hypomania. Not hypomania, but mania itself. Mania is this kind of condition that a person will have, which will be all in one direction. Now, very often, mania could manifest in love, a manic love, Manic love is the kind of love that just is unending. I love you, I love you, I can't stand not being with you. I adore you, I love you, I love you, I love you. You're amazing. I love you. And then that could turn into a sexuality. Very often, I think what they call the initial meeting of people, where they say, oh, it's a purely sexual thing. No, it's a purely manic thing. Right? You know, I got to have you. I have to touch you. I have to feel you. I want you to feel me. I want you to touch my skin. I believe that's mania. It's a manic thing. Now, it cycles. And when mania and manic love starts to wear thin, it needs to be recharged. And one of the ways that it gets recharged is through manic belligerence. Yes, you have someone who one day you loved and you couldn't stand being without. They are the love of your life. I can't spend a minute without you. And the next day, you want to rip their heart out. Let me out of here. What am I doing? I'm not even going to leave my toothbrush here. And they're packing bags and they're going out. And this seems to be a necessary part of the manic love. It's like you're breaking a fuse. It's like you're pulling a little stop in for the moment. You're scaring each other. Now, what's interesting is if one becomes belligerent and the other becomes sane, by the way, this doesn't have to only happen in love. You have it in your old families, I'm sure. But one becomes belligerent, but the other person feels sane. And the sanity, it's easy to love somebody. They become belligerent. You say, oh, honey, what's the matter? A man told me a story about a woman who was telling him, oh, I'm dying to be with you. I can't stand it. I can't wait to be with you. And I want to just rip your clothes off and get into bed with you. I can't stand it. He's waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. She shows up and he says, come on over here. And she says, no, I got to go to the bathroom. I feel shaken. No, let's have food. Well, here's food. Here's a present. Here's something. No, I got to take care of some bills. And then all of this excitement that he had is kind of sitting there, and it starts to convert. Now, meanwhile, obviously, her belligerence has already started because she's being avoided. Now she starts, and she's off somewhere just, I'm now taking care of my bills, but frantic. Frantic. She was frantic. She was doing her bills with frenzy. He comes in and he says, hey, what happened to all that good news? And she says, well, what do you think I am? Why didn't you approach me nicely? Truthfully is, if he was loving, he could have walked in and said, hey, sweetheart, I see you're very busy. I want you to know, though, I've been waiting for you to come home, and I wonder if there's any way that we could bypass the rest of this busyness and maybe get closer. He could have done that, but he didn't. No, instead, he became indignant. He started yelling. He started shouting. And she, already ready, because remember, the setup was here. The setup was, I can't wait to get my hands on you, which gets followed by, I'm a little busy. The setup is there, so she starts yelling back at him. You. And he says, you. And she says, you. And they're screaming at each other, ready to rip out each other's throat. This is a common co-belligerency. But as I said, if love were there, let's say he came out and he said, I'm upset. You promised to make love with me. And she said, you know, darling, I know I did, but if I kind of changed my mind, my mood shifted, would it please be all right with you if we just held each other tonight and we'll make love tomorrow? See, that could have just solved the whole problem. Any tenderness would have solved it. But why is there no tenderness? Because both people want the fight. When there is this co-belligerence, when two people are fighting at each other, nasty at each other, screaming at each other, you may as well adopt me because you begin sounding like everybody I know in my family. Boy, they used to yell a lot. Now, a person who is belligerent always makes believe, thinks in their mind that they're the sane one and that the other person is crazy.
Yes, yes, Aman, I can relate to that because I think that's the whole notion of belligerence, is that one of righteousness, that I'm right and my case is the case that you need to listen to. So that there is really an absence of a cooperative spirit. It's my way or the highway kind of feeling. And that's what I think is defining belligerency, the arrogance of it.
The energy of it. You know, no soft underbelly.
No.
No soft. I've got no tender spots. Hey, friends, have you been this way? Have you been belligerent? Well, we've not only found belligerence and definitions of belligerence, we've also found ways of dealing with it, and we're going to continue. By the way, we'll be taking your calls today at 212-209-2900. I'm sure you deal with this all the time. There are symptoms of belligerence, which is irritability. You know, if it's coming about, the first thing you could always see with a person who is going to be belligerent is that they're nervous. Nervousness comes first. Second becomes irritability. Now, how would you see nervousness? You'd see nervousness in a foot that keeps shaking. You'd see nervousness in moving around. You'd see nervousness in overactivity. You see nervousness in being too busy over nothing. Jumping in. One guy I know told me about the fact that he was waiting for his girlfriend to be with him, and she was on the phone. Since she uses an Apple phone, she screams into the phone because she does it. What do you call that when you do it?
The speakerphone?
She uses a speakerphone, right? And so she talks on the speakerphone. So, you know, wherever she is, if she's talking on the phone, you can hear her two rooms away because she's shouting into the phone. But you can hear the level of the shouting. And even though it's friendly shouting, she was arranging to get a phone for her mother, who her mother would never take because your mother has to pick her own phone. We know that for sure. But she was busy doing it. And she was busy talking to someone. It was busyness. Now, he could have noticed this busyness is a danger sign. She's busy. She's nervous. Belligerent symptoms are irritability. Nothing you could say is right, right? And you try what you want, manic belligerence will not get off the cuckoo train. I like that, the cuckoo train. You know, instead of the
Well, it does feel that way. You feel like you're on the cuckoo. You feel like you have no control.
I'm cuckoo and I'm on my train, right? Yeah. But you think you're sane.
Oh, sure you do.
And since cuckoo is what doves do when they love, I think we should call it the cuckoo train.
Okay.
Hyperactivity. Another thing that's a manifestation of belligerence is a sudden need to do something about it. Now, let's keep in mind what happens when animals are under threat. What do? Fight, flight.
That's right.
They organize.
Yeah, fight or flight. And I oftentimes think about when someone runs and tries to organize himself, whether it be the cleaning frenzy or organizing the linen closet or organizing the desk, it's almost a sense of rather than run, it's the fight or flight. So it would be the flight part of that, where I would think that it would be a tendency to want to organize the feelings along with the tasks that
but
you're
the feelings you're trying to organize are your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, by organizing little things, I know a woman who draws little squares on her clothing. And she does this over and over and over again
mm-hmm.
when she's filled with all kinds of stuff because she's trying to find a box to fit into. And therefore, arranging things. And arranging things becomes one person's way. Another person's way is running. Literally running. You get on your sneakers and you go out and you run, which may be the healthiest thing of all because then you're not laying it on anybody. You know? And usually, the people who are belligerent are runners because they find that a very good outlet, and it works. It works. Sometimes you could run off enough steam so that by the time you get back, you calm down. Because the words that people say when they are belligerent, although harmful words, you say things to each other like you call each other names. You bring each other's fathers up or their mothers up. You hit them wherever you can. None of those words mean anything. They don't mean anything except to the person who is a belligerent maintainer. Now, let's talk about that. Sometimes there is a belligerence that a person feels and they let go of it, but they have it on reserve and they're going to pick it up. They're going to pick it up in 5 minutes. Five, even though it's over, we've hugged, we've kissed, we've even made love. Oops, here it is again. You said my father. You did my, and they mention it again and again and again. And you could see they're looking to build a case again. Sometimes it goes into the sub-basement of the choo-choo train. That's what it does. Armand DeMille with you with Linda Vanella. We're talking about belligerence and how it manifests in people and how we live in a world where belligerence has become an important part of it because you see it so often, where in previous cultures it was not as allowable as it is now. But now we see it, and we want to defend ourselves against it. The person who is belligerent is always accusing you, with little or no revealing of their introspective self. If you ask them what they really feel, you know what they would say? They would have to dig down, and you know what's underneath belligerence? I'm afraid. I'm scared. But they can't say I'm scared because this is their defense. They're like little fish who are wounded. And what they feel like is if I don't attack, if I don't show you this aggressive self, you're going to eat me up. So I'm going to make believe I'm a shark. But what's underneath it? I'm scared. So if a person were belligerent and loving and they had a loving partner, they would let themselves shed a tear or two. And if they shed a tear, they'd step right off it. But sometimes, and then sometimes, like you said, it's chemically bound. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, thyroid is a big, big, powerful player, but so is menstrual cycles. Now, another part of this belligerence is a couple of other hormones and neurotransmitters, testosterone, cortisol. These are kind of amazing, too. Mm-hmm. Even endorphins. Because when a person is belligerent, they are filled with these chemicals. And what are they the chemicals of? You wouldn't believe it. They're the chemicals of masculinity. Yes. Masculinity. It's all the things that men carry around most of the time. They sweep over into the belligerent voice. So it's maleness. I call it maleness. So it's a man being a male. Aggressive, aggressive, yelling, shouting, barking, roar, stay away from me. And it's women being male. Same thing, aggressiveness, commanding, demanding, yelling, blaming. But it's not males being men. And it's not women being men. It's like a suspension of the ethical self. It's everybody being male and taking on those male qualities. When you listen to the voice of a belligerent person, it's staccato. They're yelling when they're talking. And they're yelling. When it's like, wah, 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 like a trumpet. Wah, 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 wah. Over and over again. Now, flight. Once you become belligerent, your mind races to validate your position. You kind of look at ideas to say, you know, you didn't pick that up off the floor 7 times. Look at how you mess up your desk and I try. Does that mean that the person's always walking around with these resentments? Does that mean the person who loves you, who says, I'm going to do all these things for you, is resenting you all the time? If you believe that, then you use belligerence as evidence that you're not really loved. But it's not true. He who picks up after you, who wants to take care of you, he only may bring it up once or twice as kind of a weapon of the belligerence. But it's not something to be paid attention to. The very mood, the very act, the very way that a person behaves tells you it's not real. It's not from the present. This is just somebody blowing off steam. As many choo-choo engines, no, as many cuckoo engines, you need to blow off steam. Now, once a manic belligerent admits that they are flighty by nature, no matter how close you get to them, if they're a manic belligerent, they're going to run occasionally. They're going to love you to death. They're going to have a blowout. They're going to use that blowout as a reason to leave you for some period of time. Then they're going to miss you and they're going to come back. But sometimes you never know if they go forever. Sometimes you don't know if you don't want to take them back. So it's kind of a dangerous thing. But what I've found with the most loving of people, Linda, I find that they work it out. I find that they work it out. They get to a point where they could absolutely work it out. And it's less and less. Two criterias. If you have a sense of belligerence, you know your choices. Your choice is that you could either run or you could attack. Let's say that you know you're being belligerent and you don't want to do it. You want to let go. The two criteria for letting go are the following. Number one, you've had practice. You see, you can't let go unless you've had practice letting go and being safe. And if you love somebody, after a while you get to realize that when you let go of your defensive position, it works and you're still loving. It's not that you're more damaged than before. Actually, you're more in love than before. So practice letting go, finding somebody who is loving and caring, who understands, even if they get co-belligerent, but just getting eventually with someone and saying, this works, that's okay. Another criterion is that you've learned that you could survive it. You learned that you could let it go for your own sake, not because of the other side. Now, of course, there's one more thing. People say, when I become belligerent, what I do is I try to think my way out of it. Forget it. The human mind is the escape. It is something that's going to create paranoid thinking. You cannot think your way out of a belligerent mindset. You can only feel your way out of it. Once you just keep running your thoughts and running your thoughts and running your thoughts, they don't go any. I mean, they're empty. When you get down to the bottom of it, you say either I'm sad or I'm scared. You don't have to say it to anyone, but it's what you have to recognize yourself. But of course, if you're in a counter-belligerent situation, then they see your tears and they interpret them as manipulation. They see you cry and they think you're manipulating them because you're going to touch them any minute now. So they attack even more. But if you've really had enough, you just eventually get to the point where you say, this is not something I want to do any longer, right? And it's nobody's fault. It's all inside me. And you relinquish it. And once you relinquish it, you go very, very far. So therapy helps you relinquish it. Primal therapy is terrific because it helps you dump it. But you've got a different method, Linda. What do you do?
Well, it's interesting that you mention the running. Armand, as you well know, I've been a runner for many years, and that's always a wonderful therapeutic tool. But I have found yoga to be really the route to really get into that feeling of those episodes of belligerence and that feeling of being out of control.
When you're saying yoga, you mean you teach yoga.
I teach
it. This is what you do.
You're
a yoga
teacher. And I live it. Yes, yes. I teach it, and I find that the rewards are wonderful. People come back, and it's very effective.
When you are teaching yoga specifically, and a person is feeling belligerent, what yoga posture would you recommend the most?
We get into the warrior posture, Armand.
You recommend the warrior?
Warrior, yes.
Describe what the warrior posture is.
The warrior pose is an extension of the legs with 70% of the weight on the front leg, which is holding your trunk, the extension of the arms to both sides, the front and the back of the body, and the gaze would be over the front hand. And it's a pose of great strength, and I find that when people enter into that, there's a sense of calm along with courage and strength, which is
now,
a wonderful.
Now, isn't that a chest stretcher?
Yes, it is.
You stretch. You've got your arms not just out. You're like reaching out.
Yes,
right?
You are stretching.
So the
out.
Warrior pose is you've got your knees a little bent. You got one knee a little bent. You got your posture on it. You've got your arms stretched out. And you're looking over your fingertips. Your chest is open, and somehow this is the beginning of a treatment for your own belligerence, because where you move from is that posture to what?
To a peaceful warrior. And so that you would extend the side of the body back. And in that extension, you keep that underbelly vulnerable. And
well,
open.
Let me describe that. You have your hand up in the air, mm-hmm. and you're reaching your hand up in the air, and you're looking upward, aren't you?
Yes, correct.
Looking upward, and that exposes the side of you as if you're saying, here, I'm vulnerable, but I'm vulnerable with strength.
Correct.
How long do you hold these poses? A minute, 2 minutes,
oh,
3 minutes?
Oh, several minutes. As many as you really need. Yoga is something that we bring to you so that whatever it is the need of the person. I have people who I just saw this morning, a woman of 79 years old, and surprisingly, she could hold it possibly for 5 or 6 minutes. But it's a posture of great strength and courage, which I think I have found when I use it with people, it's very effective.
So why wouldn't a belligerent person automatically do that?
Perhaps they don't know, they don't understand, they don't have the tool, they don't have the education.
Well, maybe they just don't want to go there yet.
Perhaps so.
They don't want to give it up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they just don't want to give it up. This is Armand DeMille. Belligerence is an important thing to understand. It comes from a lot of different sources, you know, but I think we could spend the rest of our lives doing away with it somewhat. I certainly would like to see less out there. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a tiny bit of music, and we'll take your calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
You're mean to me. Why must you be mean to me? Gee, honey, it seems to me you love to see me crying. I don't know why I stay home each night when you say your phone. You don't and I'm left alone, singing the blues and sighing. You treat me coldly each day of the year. You always scold me whenever somebody is near. Dear, it must be great fun to be mean to me. You shouldn't, for can't you see what you mean?
Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. sharing some of that stuff with you. We're talking about belligerence. We're talking about two wolves. You have two wolves. One is your belligerent wolf, as many wolves are, and the other is a kind wolf. You know, the most amazing thing I saw the other day, a program where they were talking about how they breed foxes. And they were breeding foxes, and they wanted to see, is it ever possible to have a fox as a pet? Foxes, you know, could be very mean. They're strong animals. They tend to be vicious if they're caged up. So what they did was they took the foxes, and they picked out of each brood or whatever it is, bunch of babies, they took what looked like the kindest fox, or the one most responsive to human touch, separated it from the rest of the crowd. Then they went to another brood, and they selected another fox. Then they took those two kind of nice fox, and they bred them. And in each brood, each fox had five bad ones, five mean ones, and one kind one. And they took that one again, and they went down three generations. And three generations down, they had bred absolutely kind, wonderful foxes who wouldn't hurt anybody. Wouldn't be any good in the woods nowadays, but they became house pets. Now, here's what that tells me. That tells me that we could breed ourselves. We could do our own DNA, right? And here's how we do it. We have two wolves inside us. One of us wants to be belligerent. The other one wants to be kind. Which one do you feed? That's the one that will be the strongest. So at any moment, we have this kind of, well, sometimes we have the choice, but when you've got a co-belligerence, there is very little choosing. 212-209-2900 is our number. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello there, Armand.
Hello there.
This is Sophia. Thank you so much for your show.
Hi, Sophia.
I have a comment and a question. I've been both the victim of belligerence and also a perpetrator. And at this point in my life, I have no parents, no home, no money, and I do have a few friends out of being taken advantage of. And I've been labeled bipolar, so it fits the talk very, very well. Given the circumstances, and I also am a certified yoga teacher, and I appreciate the suggestion to do, I think it's called Virabhadrasana or the warrior pose, what else would you suggest for a person in my situation? I'm going into social services, and there's a wait list between 1 month and 6 months to get housing. I don't want to be belligerent as a guest of people. My family has disowned me because of my religious choices and also their fear of mental illness. I also have the beginnings of menopause and hadn't had a period for 4 months when they put me into a behavioral health situation. So it's a complicated matter.
Sure, you know, you
could really use your advice.
I'll tell you, Sophia, you got all the burdens of the world on your nervous system. You have everything possible that would make you a mean person. If anybody had a right to be mean, you do. But look at you, what you do instead. You practice your yogi. You know the effect of the yoga, right? You've used it to help calm you down. You are volunteering your time and doing services in the world.
Fine. And, you know, now I need services.
Yeah, of course you do. Of course you do. But what it does know is even if you don't get services, you will have served well. And somehow that does something for your spirit. And all I can say to you, keep on plugging, kitty, because you have the stuff. You have the stuff, and the rest will come to you. You're doing everything you can. Just keep with it. Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Anna.
Hello, Anna.
I'm calling because I recognize myself in all the stuff that you've been talking about today. But on top of that, I have, even though I've had like a belligerent personality for a while, I was training in martial arts to kind of contain it. But now that I have children and a more busy schedule, I can't really do that as much.
What about yoga?
Well, I tried yoga, but I feel that unless I'm really moving a lot and sweating a lot, it doesn't really work for me.
Yeah, I see. So one of the things that you're talking about is you need to exhaust your energy before you could release it.
Exactly.
And I think there's a crossover point between exhaustion of energy and letting energy just be. See, if you get more comfortable with energy just existing and not having to be dispelled, then, you know, you become more comfortable with not manifesting this belligerence, not screaming. So I don't think martial arts is the right thing for you. I think if you're going to do martial arts, you may as well beat up a marshmallow. You know, you get something and you just... I think mainly what you've got to do is to learn to be quiet and challenge it. Learn. Learn how to be still. Find a therapist. Find a yoga teacher. Find somebody. Not meditation. Just stillness.
Especially because, another little thing, I have to have hyperthyroidism because I've had thyroid cancer. And so I am on hyper hormones. So I'm already coming from a hyper personality, and now my doctors want me on hyper hormone. You know what I mean? You're following me?
Sure, I do. Have you done any research into either Gary Null or into Majida Lee's protocols for dealing with that?
Not really. I guess I should do that.
Yeah, I think I would take a look at both.
Okay.
And I would see what protocols there are as alternatives for having to deal with that hyperthyroidism, you know? Because it is a contributor. It is a contributor. But you sound like a fabulous person, Annie. You sound like somebody who's filled with energy, filled with love. You must be a wonderful mother.
Well, yeah, I guess. Thank you.
Yeah, and you have a good spirit. So keep plugging along. And when the war comes, you get on our side. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay, hi. My name is Ronald Toro from the Bronx.
Hello, Ronald.
Hi, how you doing? Let me wish everybody a happy New Year when it gets here and Christmas. Okay. Belligerence is like when a person is answers angrily or cannot accept, you know, what another person is saying, like severely acting out. Is that what? That's basically belligerent.
Yeah,
right?
But you know, you should know it because your last name is Taurus.
And you know I'm pretty much that way.
You know what Taurus means, right? Taurus means the bull.
My last name is Toro, T-O-R-O.
Toro, right? That means the bull, right?
That's the Spanish word for bull, yes.
Yeah, so if you ever wanted to see belligerence, you see it in the bull. It says, no, you don't.
Something to that effect.
So if you want to become more calm, change your name. No, I'm only kidding.
Actually, what I wanted to say was, I think that the lady touched upon it, because I think that, you know, from the way I experience it, it's a defense mechanism when something challenges you at the core of what you basically fear, your lack of power, which you will not show to the world. So once it's even slightly open, when somebody says something that you cannot, equally respond to in your own eyes, this furor takes over, you know.
So give me an example.
And I just want to say that the lady said, due to lack of education or due to lack of not intelligence, But through the lack of exposure. To anyway, I got a little bit lost. But, you know, in other words, you have to challenge it causally, like the lady said. You have to realize that you're just not prepared to deal with it, and you got to accept that as a reality and try to, grow.
Yes,
in every way you can. But that's all through life.
Yes, Ronald, I'm with you. You're absolutely right when you say it struck to the core, and that's what I'm hearing you're saying. And you're absolutely right, and I'm glad that you're saying when we don't have the tools, and we don't know, we lack the exposure, as you're saying, and I'm glad that you heard that. It's as though we're that dog barking, we're that animal that's sort of out of control, and you feel like you've been hit at the core, and all you want to do is kind of rip the heart out, you know. So
in the individual's eyes, he's hit at the core, mm-hmm.
So let me ask you something, Ronald. What is the core that they could strike at?
Anything that,
yeah, pick one.
You know, these things that...
Pick one.
Let's
pick
say
one.
You feel like you have a low intelligence.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, something exposes you to that, you know, a conversation or a comment you made, and somebody comes back and repudiates it, you know, rejects it. And, you know, it's just a myriad of underlying conditions that spring up at that moment, because back to evolution, you're disempowered at that moment completely. And then the animal responds, you know.
Right, you know, you're amazing.
But the hard part is to accept the reality.
Well, wait, let's take this back a second, you know. Ronald, I noticed, B, when you started speaking, by your choice of words, one of the things I said to myself, this man has a lot of intelligence. And, you know,
no,
he
I
has
got a little IQ, but, you know.
No. This man has a lot of intelligence. And by using of words like repudiation and by myriad and other words that you choose, I see you've also got the vocabulary to go with it. So there's a part of you that is still carrying a sensitivity from childhood where your diagnosed low IQ, you believe, can be exposed, and you could be exposed to yourself as being somebody who can't handle things because you're not that intelligent. So your sensitivity is to seeing yourself as not intelligent, not for the world seeing you.
But at the core, that's probably at the core of what most men or anyone will respond to be all of a sudden exposed as not being able to contribute.
Well, I think men are just as sensitive to being perceived as having penises that are too small, you know, or that they can't really be adequate and that they can't really do the job.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
that's,
men are really...
You know, everybody wants to be, you know, a lot better than they are. And
yeah.
Some people, you know...
But not everybody.
In life setbacks, you go get a job, you couldn't handle it, you went to take a test at the insurance company and you didn't pass it, you know, little things like that. And they I guess, you know, if it's an actual physiological reality, you got to accept it and work on it.
You know,
you just got to do what you can. I can't. Now I'm your whole ring is to embracing the reality of cause and effect. In other words, you know. And I know you know about that because you've had a few programs and discussions on that. But I'm just saying that, you know, the remedy has to be as real as the suffering. We can't dismiss it by saying, oh, it's the world. It's the people in
exactly
it.
Exactly right.
And because I do that all the time, but I know better. But there's no remedy.
Hey, Ronald, you know, I wish you would be a constant presence on my face page. You know, go to the Positive Mind Face page where we're always asking opinions. You're a man who is talking from his heart and from his mind. I would love to join you to have a comment every time we bring up a subject. You're a beautiful man. Thank you for calling in. Thank you. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Edward.
Hello, Edward.
Hi. I like to comment about belligerent.
Sure.
I don't consider myself a belligerent person, but there are times when I have to be belligerent in order to defend myself because I came under an attack.
Sure.
I was picked on by some other young men when I was in high school, and I fought back, and I was suspended a couple times for fighting, but I don't regret that. And then maybe about 20 years ago, four teenagers tried to rob me on the subway, and I fought back, and as all the fighting back, they got my wallet, but when the train pulled into the station, someone on the subway pulled the emergency cord, and they were apprehended by the police.
So, yes, so would we call that defensiveness, or would we call that belligerence? You sound to me like a man who's a good-hearted man who had to take care of himself when it's appropriate, and did.
Yes.
And did. No, that's not what I'm calling belligerence. Belligerence is always unfair. It's uncalled for. It's being a little meaner than a situation requires.
I see, because I always have some problems with my wife where we get in an argument. She's very critical, and then I can't take any more.
Sure, then you stand up against her. But her criticism,
yes,
is belligerence. You see, that's it right there. So if she would only learn, in fact, let me recommend that you go to my website and look at the thing called the Three Horsemen of the Apocalyptic Relationship, one of them being about criticism, so that you could learn the nature of criticism and maybe share it with your wife. And you'll find that there may be another way to step through it.
Well, let me write that down.
Sure. It's called the Three Horsemen of the Apocalyptic Relationship. And you'll find it under relationships.
Three Horses of the Apocalyptic
Relationship. It's very obvious if you choose in categories, relationships, you get plenty of stuff to hear.
I see.
All right. And if you don't get it, Ed, be sure to give me a call and I'll find it for you. You're a good man. Thank you for calling in.
Right. You're welcome. I just want to, what else did I want to say? That, you know, my wife has some of the features that my mother had. She's a domineering person. Hello?
Yes, we're here.
She's a domineering person like my mother. I know men tend to fall in love with women who are like their mothers.
Uh-huh. Well, you were used to, when you were a kid, you were used to having a strong mother.
Yes.
And what you were looking for when you went out there looking for somebody to be with is you chose someone with strength. The domination doesn't necessarily have to be a part of it. But what you would do eventually is you would allow yourself to be led by your wife's strength. It doesn't have to be dominant. She could still be strong. But when you step up and you start showing what you feel,
then
that dominance will turn into just strong loving.
I say, because I stand up to her and I criticize her, then that thing really escalates.
You don't want to be criticizing back.
I see.
So what you will do is whenever she criticizes you, say that hurts.
I do mention
just
it.
Say
very
it.
Hurtful.
Don't say you're being very hurtful. Just say that hurts.
I see.
And say nothing else.
Okay.
Okay, and thank you very much for calling in, Edward.
Right, you're welcome.
All right, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Benella. Let's take another call.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good day, good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good evening. I just want to share something with you, something I found out 2 years ago and up to about 2 months ago, something that a nutritionist, scientist, read from a research paper that they found that, is it all right for me to say what it is? I'm not going to call the scientist's name.
Sure.
Okay. He said they found that for bipolar, and the subject that you spoke on before, vitamin C, but they have to take that for the rest of their life, and also magnesium. And the next thing was fish oil and L-theanine. L-theanine is the fuzzy bud, not from the tea. It's the same tea plant, the green tea plant, but only when it has that fuzzy bud, they take that and they make L-theanine out of it, and that calms down the brain. And
where would people find this recipe?
Hello?
Where would people find this recipe?
But I have to call him because I just turned the radio on, didn't think I was going to be on WABI because I was listening to some politics somewhere else. and I turned it on.
Okay, so when you get it,
I would try to get it.
And go to my face page and leave it there, and the people will find it.
All right. And,
right,
the fish oil they just found about 3 months ago, that fish oil, 1,000 milligrams of that helps.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. We're talking about belligerence. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi. Hello there.
Yeah, this is Nelson DeMille.
Yes, it is. Hi. Hi, Nelson DeMille.
Well,
yeah.
I'd love to get on.
Yes, you're on, and I'm speaking with you.
Wow, that's amazing.
Here we are.
It sounds to me, sir, like you're talking about compatibility issues. You're talking about belligerence. But I think most belligerence comes down to a lack of compatibility. Right?
Oh, no. I know awfully compatible people who eventually will dip into belligerence. There is an incompatibility belligerence that does happen when two people
are... Are you familiar with the term biorhythm?
Yes.
In people's lives?
Sure.
I've got an application which I've gotten to the iPhone, and I'm sure everyone listening could do this. I've been watching this for about a year and a half, and I have all hundreds of people that I'm friends with, and I swear to you, it is scientific in the compatibility. If you run a compatibility between somebody and yourself, and the compatibility for intellectual or emotional is off, from my personal experience, it comes down to compatibility issues, and therefore,
sure. Now let me ask you something.
Yes.
If you're laying in someone's arms,
okay,
can you get their compatibility index without looking at your iPhone?
As long as I know when they're born, yes.
Oh, and what if you don't know that they're when they're born and you're laying in their arms and you don't have an iPhone? What do you do then?
Well, I wouldn't be laying in their arms if I didn't know these kind of things. Probably.
If you didn't know where they were born, you wouldn't lay in their arms in the first place.
Correct. Pretty much. I'm a little more, I don't do the one night stand pick. You know, I like to know somebody before I go that far.
And what if,
your answer is,
what if you met a refugee or someone who didn't know where they were born? Sure.
I would, you know, empathetically, I would probably know if we got along, but,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yes. You would know, you see, because you would feel it in your heart. But sometimes you want to validate with your mind. What's your name, by the way?
It's Albert.
Albert, I want to thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sure.
Great
show. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. If you wanted to hear today's rebroadcast, you can always go to thepositivemind.com or you can go to WBAI.org. I will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., where we have more very interesting stuff. I'll speak to you then. Bye-bye.